Founders, welcome back to the Zero to 5,000 podcast, where we obsess over the convergence of human potential and business results. Today, our hosts Drew McClure and Jordan Mitchell have another insightful conversation for you. So let's jump right in.
Allie, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Drew.
Now, normally where we start is how you got into your business career. I typically ask, like, how this thing whole start, where'd the idea come from? But you have a unique background that I really like to touch on because I know there's got to be obvious intersections with what you're doing in life and business and this part of your past. And the part of your past I'm referring to is that you were a silver medalist in the 2004 Olympic Games as a rower. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
Okay. So you're the first Olympic athlete I've had the privilege of talking to. So I'm excited about that. What comes to mind when you think about that experience and working as a team and competing at the highest level? Where have you seen some of that translate into your actual life and your career?
Well, thanks for the question and thanks for having me on. This is awesome. I love this podcast and I listen to it every week.
Thank you.
For sure. 100%. Nothing I like more than hearing from experiences from other really driven people, the ups, the downs, the ugly, the truth.
Yeah.
And also the big successes. I love cheering on like kind of my fellow entrepreneur for sure. But to answer your question, how did I get into it? I walked on at the University of San Diego after having a super successful high school career in my small farming town. And I was like, what is this? And funny story, I actually showed up in a bathing suit because I didn't know, I didn't know anything about rowing. I didn't know that you're on the water versus in the water. And, but it ended up being just a really a natural fit for me spiritually, physiologically, emotionally. It just was a great sport for me. I think just the driven competitiveness, sheer teamwork. I'd so much rather win big as a team than than medium individually. That's just kind of my nature. And then, you know, physically, like I'm 6 feet tall, I have a long wingspan, and my leg length is perfect for a boat. Like it just kind of all fit. And not that it was easy from the beginning, but there was definitely just kind of sparks of genius. And I remember kind of, I think one of my early memories was watching the coaches on my college team, kind of sort of their eyes light up like with sheer joy, just because I could hit some numbers on the ergometer that they had never seen before at that program. And that was great. And I was
For you, was it like, hey, there's this really athletic, strong person, and all we have to do, which I know is not a small feat, but all we have to do is teach them how to translate that into this dynamic? Is that kind of what it was?
100%. And how not to flip a boat and, you know, all those things for sure. I mean, I had all the team. I love being on a team. Truly. I love being coached. I like leading. I like following. I feel very comfortable as a team captain. I also feel very comfortable, like as long as I believe in the leadership around me, like stepping in line and playing that role also. So, and I also, you know, just like to win, quite frankly. And so I will play whatever role is needed to win. And that's what I do even today at Noble West. And I think that's where that carryover just really, really is true. And then, you know, I do a lot of pitching. We're always pitching for new business as, you know, the leader of an agency. So we always have another deal around the corner. I've got a pitch right after this. I had a pitch already this morning. And so how to sort of like gear up and utilize adrenaline and utilize your focus and your competition in business is something that I think a rowing race is absolutely like the best training there possibly could be, because you've got to get so fired up because it is such a short, intense burst. And that's the same as a pitch. Game face on, you know?
Is there a routine or a like visualization? Like how do you mirror that? Like what got you ready for a race that translates to getting you in the same kind of energy and mindset for a big pitch?
Well, you know, when they say a good time for you to retire from pretty much anything, but particularly from sports, is if you're not getting nervous anymore, it's probably time for you to retire, right? And also if you're not nervous, then you're probably not doing your best. You might be a little bored. And so I would say like, get those nerves, get it all out. Like I always have a little kind of nervous anxiety, but in a good way, and but channel it then, right? Mm. Channel it, that nerve, those nerves into competition. And that's how you're going to get a great athlete. And quite frankly, I think in sports, a lot of times the actual physical best athlete isn't necessarily the best person on the field winning. They probably are just unbelievable at handling the pressure and unbelievable at channeling that that, like a Steph Curry, obviously, like he's mm-hmm. somebody who's an amazing athlete. But he's probably not the most technically quote unquote, like athletic person on the court, but man, he's a gamer, right? Like he is 100,000, he finds a new level when he continues to find new levels as the game progresses and as like, you know, as championship progress. And so, but that's kind of where I always kind of like, what is the next level? How can I connect so much faster than other people? And how can I really make sure that I'm using those nerves for good and for positive? Cause that carries over all the place. And I, you know, again, that kind of that gamer mentality, like that's what it took over and over and over again to make the team, because my God, making the team is even harder than winning a medal at the Olympics. So that's what it takes. And I feel like that's what also I apply to work on a weekly, daily basis.
I love that. It's
and
funny.
Also, sorry, Drew, just to interrupt, and also take your rest when you have the rest, right? Like that's the other thing great athletes do. Like when you have the moment, like, and you like between games, like take your rest. And that's what I try to encourage people that work with us to do, was like, listen, like if you've got a little lull in your contract or in your, whatever your deliverables are, like take the rest, work on your goals, reset, and then come back stronger than ever. So,
yeah, sorry. No, I love that. I mean, for me, first for me personally, and then for what I actually do. So I've talked about this on the podcast. I don't know if you've heard any of those episodes, but outside of this, what I actually do is coach executives, coach leadership teams. I am a keynote speaker, you know, that type of stuff, but I focus on performance.
I'm a fan, Drew. I'm a fan.
Okay.
Let's be real here. I'm a fan. This is a moment. You. This is a moment for me. Okay.
But what started to click for me is I always tell, like, I help people with what's helped me, right? Like you lead from, you feed others what has fed yourself. And so there was a point at which I was feeling burnt out, where the nerves were getting to me, where I was feeling like I got a lot of anxiety and I don't know how to channel it. And what helped me was I was like, I'm a dummy. This is no different than when I played sports at a high level. And it was like a touchstone. It was like a memory I could go back to and go, you used to think about these feelings differently. They didn't bother me. Mm-hmm. And now they do bother me. And it's how I'm thinking about it. Does that make sense?
Right.
And so even what you talked about with rest, I was like, yeah, I found this guy who's really a great writer. He started talking about the formula of growth is stress plus recovery equals growth. You got two variables. Yep. You got the stress, which is the workout. It's the intensity, the expenditure of energy. Mm-hmm. But then you have the recovery, which is where you get the gains. It's where the body repairs itself, where it translates what you worked on into power, speed. Right. And I was like, that is a great formula for the working person. Like most of us are just stress, like, and feel guilty. Like you coaching your team, feel guilty if there's a lull in the contract or a slow morning. They're like, I gotta be busy. You might be missing a moment for recovery, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just to give you a little bit of throwback, just to prove out really how much of a fan I are, you had Gene Freeman on, the CEO and founder of Zambezi agency. That's an amazing advertising agency. Gene was referring to a friend of hers who thought that she could win and grow a company just on sheer will. So side note, she was talking about me. And she didn't mention names, but I listened to it and she said, you better listen to this. So she was talking about me. I was sheer, and I fried myself. Fried myself. And then I did hire a coach, somebody similar to like the service that you provide. And her recommendation was, Allie, I've audited your team. I have paid attention to what you're doing. And this is my roadmap that I'm recommending for you to do. And like full disclosure, it was hire people between you and the most junior people. You need more management, because right now you're trying to be everything to everybody and you can't close the deals you want because of it, and et cetera, et cetera. And that sheer will can get you so far, right?
Yeah.
And I think like athletically, there's a lot of really successful college athletes who are sheer will going to make it, but it won't get you to the Olympics and it certainly won't get you to a medal, because the pressure gets too high and there's just too much competition and the grind is so relentless. I would argue the same happened with me in my corporate is like, and honestly, Gene's been super helpful in like helping me see that as a good friend would, like showing a mirror. And same thing, like we're not on sheer will going to make it through like this economic downturn, this like craptastic economy, but through teamwork, through having confidence that sometimes looks like ego, but sometimes looks like confidence, paying attention to the details, leaning into your strengths, again, not trying to be everything to everybody. And when you get the shot, take it. Like if you've got the meeting, make it happen and do whatever you have to do before or after that meeting to get yourself to that, which maybe that looks like blocking your calendar. So like for me, I cannot have an HR meeting the same day I'm going to be having a pitch. I can't. Mm. It just, I know myself, like they wipe me out. And those are just not, so I really try to avoid internal meetings on sales days, quite frankly. And that's just one of my, that's one of my tricks for the trade. And I didn't know that about myself until a couple years ago. But I think it's the same thing with like preparing for races, right? You all know what you need to do for your warm up. Every athlete's different. And how are you going to fit that in? And that's the same in work.
That's so good. I like you use the phrase, I know what works for me. Mm. And that I think is something that anyone listening could ask themselves. Like, have I even asked what works for me?
Right.
Because again, as an athlete, like I could take you back to the exact routine I had every game day.
Yeah.
Because it was something that worked for me.
Right.
It was like that got me in the right headspace, the right body space, the whatever. But then as a business owner, an entrepreneur, or a parent or whatever, we just start doing things.
Right.
We just fall into like, I don't know, it just happens that I have HR meetings on the same day as my pitch meetings, and I guess I'll just do that.
Yeah.
Instead of going, do I have to do it that way?
Mm-mm.
Like, could I separate those? And then you do, and you're like, whoa, I'm way more focused on the HR day, you know, that I can get in that headspace. Mm-hmm. And I'm way more focused in a different gear when I'm in a pitch meeting day. But it started with you first, I think, having freedom to even say, like, is this what works for me? Do you feel that some, like, I need almost like permission to even ask the question, is this what's best for me?
Yeah, clarity of thought. But here's the thing. You don't get to that clarity of thought if you're just like, boom, 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 like making it, punching it out, right? And I'll have to say, like, when I hear my employees, the people that work with me, and when I hear them ask for what they need in order to accomplish their big goals, I am like all in. Like I will block and tackle for you, because good on you for saying what you need, for recognizing the help that you need, identifying the blockers, and also making me so proud that those goals that we worked on for your department plan or for your annual plan or for your personal goals, you are taking them seriously. And once I hear that, I'm like, I am all in on doing everything I can. And I think that just, again, takes clarity of thought. It's like, man, how do you manage up and how do you kind of manage your time? But you don't get to this level. This is why, like, being older, this is like one of the good things of being older is like, you know what it takes. And I feel like our clients find comfort in knowing that they're working with an agency and maybe an agency leader who isn't afraid to like call it like it is, because that is where I think this, like, the confidence of being like an expert in knowing what they need, because I feel like that's a place where we help our clients too. Yeah. Like, listen, take a pause. This isn't working for you. This campaign's not working for you. By the way, that direct report that you have is draining you. Like, this is like, these are the things, like, that's where, like, we got to provide, you know, we work in a very consultative nature. Most of our clients utilize us for outsourced marketing departments, which means sometimes I wear the hat of VP of marketing, which is like, listen, CEO, like, you're killing your budget. This person isn't working. I think we really need to look at this from the ground up. And that takes confidence. It also takes the ability to know your skills and know where you're not, you know, where you focus your efforts.
If someone is saying, I just don't feel confident, you know, it's hard for me to get in that state of feeling confident and calling, you know, making the decision, or what encouragement would you give them? How does someone build their confidence?
Well, I say this a lot. In order to become good at hard stuff, you got to do hard stuff. Mm. So if you want to be somebody that knows how to make game time decisions and calls when you're on the line and when there's a lot at stake, the only way you're going to get good at that is if you do it often.
Mm. That's really
and
good.
So the first couple times are going to be the hardest. And I also think just like asking for support without asking for help. There's a word that we use internally oftentimes, which is like, I'm going to sponsor this, which doesn't mean I'm going to do it. It means I'm going to sponsor you. I'm going to show up to that meeting that's going to be hard for you. You're going to do the hard work, but I'm going to sit there and I'm going to sponsor it so that your client knows that I believe in you and I believe in this and I'm going to let you talk. I'm literally going to be like a sponsor. Mm. And that's something that I think that's a word that's really powerful. But you need to be clear. So now I know if somebody says, hey, Allie, I got this meeting. I've got it. I just really, can you sponsor it? And I will, if I can attend, I'll go and I will do that. I will do exactly that. I'll kind of act like the, you know, the older sister in the situation and just sort of sit there and sponsor it and maybe throw out a few softballs so that they can have a nice hit, you know?
Yeah.
And tee up some questions that might make me look a little dumb that I probably already know the answer. Tee them up, right? The other thing is if I can't attend it for whatever conflicting reason, then I might send a little note to the CEO being like, I'm so sorry, I can't go. You've got a great meeting on your hands though. The team's worked really hard. I've seen all the materials. I'm excited for you to listen to so-and-so because she's got a great point of view. That's wow. That's a sponsor, right? But
yeah.
I think, okay, so Drew, coming full circle back to like your question of like rowing and applying sports to business, same thing, right? Yeah. Like if I'm not the right person for that seat, I want that person to have, like I was not a great stroke. Stroke is the person that sits in the front of the boat and sets the cadence. I liked it. It was fun. You know, you're right up front. It's awesome. You can talk to the coxswain. Like there's all sorts of great things. I was not a great stroke. And I actually had a terrible, terrible world championships in 2003. I mean, 100 years ago. And that was probably when I realized like, no, put me where I really am the most valuable to the team, which is seat 4 and 5. Like, let's put me in the back
of the
bus.
What's the difference in those seats and the front seats?
That's where you put typically, traditionally, your most powerful people. Maybe they're not technically as strong. There's a whole rowing thing about it. It's because the boat is technically a little lower in the middle. Like we're talking inches or centimeters. It's a little lower. So technically you can't do as much like damage to the set, which is how set the boat is. So like, I was like, I told the coach, I said, this is such a bad race. If I get another shot, can you really just think about me for the engine room in the middle? And wow. he's like, for sure. And I said, I just have no business being up there. He's like, I know, but but at the time it was the right coaching move for him. So anyway, but I think that's really just sort of like knowing your place and feeling, again, I want to win as a team. I don't want to win as, otherwise I'd just be a consultant. I'd be an independent contractor and you wouldn't want me on this podcast because I wouldn't have built anything.
It's so good though, because you see that in business so many times where like we look at it in two different categories. One is we got to pass test one. Are you even a good fit for this company?
Yeah.
And that's more of like a culture fit, a values fit, that type mm-hmm. of thing. As long as you pick that, we're now into an interesting conversation, mm-hmm. which is, do we even have your strengths in the right spot? Mm-hmm. You know? And it's like, you see somebody struggling over here who in your example is in that front seat and mm-hmm. it's bringing an element to the game that's really not in their skill set mm-hmm. and finding out, having some self-awareness, where could we put them mm-hmm. that their strengths really shine and their weaknesses are minimized?
Yeah.
You get a whole new one engagement from them, but value mm-hmm. to the company, right?
Mm-hmm. Totally. Like, you know, the analogy, we got to get the right people on the bus.
Yes.
Okay, now we need to make sure all the people are sitting in the right seats.
Yes.
And then the interesting thing is, the third to me is that when you're talking to startups is, do you want, if somebody asks you to take a ride on a spaceship, are you going to ask what seats you're on?
Yeah.
And sometimes I have been in a situation where somebody's interviewing with us and they're so curious, they just need to know every single detail. And then I go, you know what? I don't think our mission speaks to you. Because if our mission did speak to you, you would trust me to put you where I think you belong.
Absolutely.
So, and that's where mission, vision, and values, I think, comes so, like, is so critical, because then, I always think of those three things. Are they asking, like, you want to get on a spaceship or not? What bus and, like, what seat on the bus, right?
Yeah. Well, I love that you said that, because I've seen the same thing where in the startup, you need a totally different kind of mindset and player than you do in the established business.
Totally.
And it's actually been interesting to see people that go from startup to more established.
Yeah.
Have lost some people mm-hmm. and didn't understand why.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, no, at the very beginning, you're recruiting a totally different kind of person.
100%.
You know, every now and then you might have a few key specialists, but you usually are generalists, people that are like, I'll take on whatever hat. I'll be marketing person today. I'll be problem solver tomorrow, because we don't have the bandwidth or the ability to hire specialists yet. Mm-hmm. But they're also very comfortable and excited by the unknown. There's so many unknowns in the startup.
How do you handle risk?
How to handle risk. Yeah. But then you've got somebody like you're talking about that they are really wanting the company 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
They want real clear laid out. Here's my job description. Here's what I know my day is going to look like. And that's just not the set. That's not the season the business is in, right?
But Drew, the hardest thing out of the scenarios you just said, from my perspective, because I have been in this situation now, because we restructured, we became a new company 4 years ago. And then a year ago, we had created a new name. Like, I mean, we rebranded. And the hardest thing is when somebody's outgrown the startup.
And what
they
do
don't,
you do then?
And they don't know it.
When you mean they've outgrown it, how?
We don't need their services anymore. That's the hardest part. I've seen it happen. I've been in a couple iterations of that four times just within my own company over 17 years. Yeah. That is the hardest conversation, because somebody maybe has been loyal to you. They weren't asking about what seat they're going to sit on. They just wanted to be supportive and whatnot. And that's where it's hard when then you're like, now we're in the sort of specialist territory.
Yeah.
And like, you're awesome and you're so loyal and I just appreciate everything you've done, but I think it's time for you to go lend this service somewhere else for yourself and for me. And that's the hardest part. That's where leadership just sucks. It just really is such a bummer to be the one in charge who has to make those calls.
Yeah.
It's the hardest.
Yeah. It emotionally sucks. You know, I think for me, one thing that helped, and I had to do this with my own business, is I read Yvonne Chouinard's book, Let My People Surf, mm-hmm. the founder of Patagonia.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just remember his take on firing people. He's like, it doesn't make it any less sucky, but it does help me frame it, which is, I want the best for you. And if the best for you is not here, then the best thing I can do is help you along the way to wherever the next place is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, if they've been super loyal to me and I really do believe in them, I'll even open up my contact list and like, hey, where can we put you?
Yeah.
And I just like, man, that is a helpful way to think of it. Cause he's like, if they're not right for the business anymore, it's not right for you, but also they're not going to like it 5 years from now. And they're going to feel like I wasted my time trying to fit in somewhere that the culture changed. A lot of those people you'll hear like, I wish it was back to when it was 12 of us.
Totally.
You know, I wish when we were all working out of the Starbucks together and doing whatever. Totally. And you're like, that was fun. Mm-hmm. That's just not where we are anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be life-giving just to go find another startup. Maybe that's your thing. Mm-hmm. Is that you're really valuable in the early stages of a business. Mm-hmm. And it sucks right now though, having to part ways, you know?
Totally.
Is that how you see it a little bit of like, I know it sucks and we get caught in the emotion, but big picture, like you moving on is gonna be the best thing for you.
Yeah. And that's all really hard when it's with really loyal people.
It's
and you just want the best one. Cause at this point, my God, like, you know, their families, like it's just, whoa, you know, that's a tough spot, but you got to stay, but that's where, again, back to mission, vision, and values, you've got to be true to all of those things. If you are going to lead about, like I always say, I am driving a like steamship right across the ocean. We're going in this direction. And this is why I'm going in this direction. I cannot tell you anything about how the steamship works. I just know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I just know that this is where we're going. And I have to, at this point, there are so many people that are in charge of all the little, not little things, they're big things, but they're not something that I should be part of, because I need to make sure that we are in line with our vision, our mission, our values, and we are growing in a way that is like authentic to like the vision of the company. That's why everybody works here.
Yeah.
And then once they sort of start doing work that they love and they're successful, then I think that like kind of leads to the next. But yeah, no, it's tough. It's tough, but I feel like that's back to sports. It's also part of sports. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Was it always that clear to you? Like what you just expressed is really clear that, you know, I'm really good at this and I need to keep my focus on this and then hire and surround myself with people that are doing these other things I'm not good at. Was it always that clear to you? Or was there a time that you unknowingly were doing those things that you have no business doing and maybe it was distracting from you adding your best?
Okay. So I have an analogy. Before, like for the first probably 8 years of my entrepreneurial career with the agency, I led like an octopus. I was at the middle and my tentacles were in everything. Nothing really happened without me. It's in some way. Then I would say like 2020 to 2022, I wanted to lead like a dolphin, go out and see where we're going, then come back to the school to be with the team, go out. And now my goal is to lead like a hawk. I want to, so again, all the analogies, I want to be able to fly above the fray. I want to see, and I can swoop in super fast. If there's a problem, I can do my best. And then I want to go back out. And the only reason I can go back out is because I have people who work with me now who are telling me the hard things. Yeah. And because of that, there's that level of trust. I can do that. And so it was really hard for me to get to this place. But I would say that clarity really came from having great people around you who are better at their individual jobs than I am at their individual job. And then just kind of trusting in like the growth. But what really had to happen was I had to get real honest and clear with what my goals were for the company so that I could translate that to the right people.
How does that feel on the other side of that clarity?
It feels amazing.
Yeah.
It feels amazing. It feels empowering. It feels like I am now just able to do like work within my geniuses, right? Like yeah. I spend the majority of my day in my geniuses. And that's because there's great people that I trust who are like leveling themselves up every year also, right? And yeah. I think that's probably one of the most beautiful parts of my career. That's probably, it is definitely the part that I value the most. Wow. And I think our clients see that too. Like the value that we can now provide for our clients just is like so much greater because there's just more smart people working on it, quite frankly. Yeah. And that's probably one of the best parts of my job.
Have you mentioned working in your geniuses. Have you read The Big Leap or The Genius Zone by Gay Hendricks?
I haven't.
I think you would love it.
Okay. Thanks for the referral. I actually really, the geniuses, I've been following Patrick Lencioni and the Working Genius.
Working Geniuses.
And yep. that's definitely something that I kind of keep in mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the Working Geniuses as well. I think the thing I liked for his, he had just like a simple like 2x2 that like he said, at any given moment, you're in one area of competence or one zone of competence. There's incompetent zone, which you're regularly getting negative feedback about. Most people are better than you at it. Why are you doing that? Next would be the competent zone, which is I'm pretty much on par with the people around me. I'm pretty good at it, but I'm not uniquely good at it. And then you have the excellent zone, which is I'm consistently getting good feedback on this. I'm better than most people at it. But it's, he said, that's the trap, is that most people actually spend their life in their excellent zone and get paid to be in their excellent zone and never found what he'd call your genius zone, which is you're unusually good at this. And he said, it's the highest return of effort to reward that you do compared to anything else you do. And he said, he's seen careers change and people's fulfillment change. The more they can start moving. And he said, sometimes it takes a decade, depending on your situation. The more you can start moving even not just to excellent, but beyond excellent to like, I'm honed in on my genius. Mm-hmm. Like for every hour I do this, I get 10x the return that I spend even in my excellent zone. Mm-hmm. And that's just been a fascinating conversation with Absolutely. Business owners.
It sounds like it. Yeah, no, I hear you. And also just so much more joyful way to live.
Yes.
And because I feel like when you're there, like the challenges that come along, like kind of the speed bumps and the hurdles and the whatnot, it's easier to palate, I think, because you can't get knocked off as much if you are actually working where you should be.
Yeah.
The probably one of the more frustrating things for me is when people don't have awareness about their skills and don't have the capability to sort of be vulnerable and the trust to be vulnerable and say kind of, this is working for this reason, but this isn't. And I think I'd really like this. And that's where, you know, I wish that as a younger professional, when I was in my 20s, I wish I didn't bounce around as much, but I also didn't have that sort of language or understanding to ask a manager like for that kind of help. And that's where I hope that, I think the tide has changed a little bit with this different this new generation of millennials and Gen Zs. But I think it's, you know, I always say like, before you come to me to put in your 2 weeks notice, can we have a conversation about what's working? Because by that point, it's just too late. And yeah. I hate it when young professionals do that. It just feels, that to me is probably the most irritating, is like, if there's a cultural fit here and you believe exactly. in what we're doing and you believe that I am a good leader and you like, you generally like 80 to 85% of what your job is, you quitting because you don't understand the roadmap just means that, A, maybe we haven't communicated enough. Maybe we haven't spent enough time doing your, you know, performance growth planning and all of that, but like come to me with the problems before it's like, well, there's still a chance to fix it.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Yeah. And it sounds like as you, as a leader, you have the opportunity to create that kind of culture and invite that conversation mm-hmm. that might keep great talent before it just without, you know, necessarily needing to leave, they leave. And you're like, wait, we didn't even have a conversation, right?
Hey, yeah. I learned that the hard way. It was, I think it was about 6 years ago. A woman worked here. I thought she was going to be my business partner in life. Like, I thought we were so on the same page, and she came to quit. And I was like, what? I thought that we were going to be able to work together forever. I thought you were going to buy this thing for me, you know? Yeah. And she's like, how would I ever have known that? I said, well, instead of coming to quit, you would have said, this is what's working and this is what I want for my life. And this is the changes I want. And you know, that's the conversation that would have happened, but it didn't.
Why do you think we don't have those conversations? I think that's totally relatable that many of us have done that before. Is it just scary or like
every CEO or manager that's listening to this podcast has had that scenario.
Yeah.
And you're like, God, I thought things were good. They weren't. I don't know why we don't have more of those conversations. Maybe it's just because we don't put out into the world that we want that. But I think that's one of, you know, Gen Zs and millennials, they take a lot of there's a big breath. I feel like they take a lot of hits for like kind of just like the years they were born, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is a place where older managers can learn from them. Like they yeah. are good at sort of saying, this is what I want. They're much better than I was, you know, being a Gen Xer. Like I didn't know that I had any sort of like any like space to say that. But I feel like that's a place where we can sort of like look to them to say, like I think they're better at talking about their needs.
That is so true. Yeah. It's interesting. I'm thinking of two examples that people could probably relate to. I had one person put in their 2 week notice. So I'm working with this organization and the CEO was like, so-and-so put in their 2 weeks. I was like, really? What? Like, cause I coached that person as well. I'm like, what's going on? We get into the bottom of it. And basically she was having to work alongside somebody else that that relationship had been deteriorating. And it got so unbearable to her that she was like, I'd rather just go somewhere else. Now we talked to her again and we're like, well, hold on. What if we actually had a conversation about this? And so long story short, she actually has a direct conversation with that person. It goes well. We even figure out a few small changes to help them work better together. It goes well. She's so pumped she stayed. So I'm reviewing this with her and I'm like, so what really is the lesson here? And she's like, I'm realizing the lesson is I almost just walked away from an amazing career that I've spent 10 years in because I was afraid to have a confrontational conversation.
Absolutely.
With somebody.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm like, that's a big aha. I almost just made a huge decision because I avoided one conversation.
Happens all the time. Every single leadership podcast I listen to, every analysis, everything. The reason why people don't progress is because they are afraid of conflict,
yes.
including trust-based conflict. And yes. that's where I got to stick up for the CEOs in this a little bit, because I think about myself, like, I hope I'm facilitating that, but I'm also not a mind reader. So, right? Like right. I'm trying to keep everybody paid and profitable and bonused and doing all the stuff. And if I don't know what's happening, like you've got to give me the opportunity and I can't read your mind. So yes. like, if we don't have a culture where you feel comfortable coming to me, holy cow, I have really kind of failed. And I also think like, Drew, sometimes this is just a reset. Like, yeah. like right now, honestly, vulnerably, it's probably time for me to have a check-in because I have been on like the new business tear because it's Q1. So like understanding that, like those are sort of conversations you have to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, I think we can look and say, where could I create that culture better? And then we also have to ask for grace and say, I can't do this alone. Like
totally.
I need you guys to take my invitation of, I want the conversation to let me know what's really going on. I mean, the second thing I was thinking about, I had another person that was like, I hate my job right now. I was like, really? That's a big, in my mind, that's a big statement, right? In her mind, it was a simple statement. She's like, it's draining me. I really don't enjoy it. And I was like, well, let's break that down. So I made her list out all of her responsibilities and I made her put them in those different categories, which I was like, each one's got to go in a category.
Yeah.
By the end of that exercise, she goes, actually, don't hate my job. I just hate these two things.
Okay.
I was like,
oh my God.
But those two things were so draining to her that it made her in general say, I don't like my job. And I was like, what if we just got rid of those two things? We did something with them. She was like, I think I'd love my job again. I'm like, well, we just saved you from leaving a job, finding a new job. Because we didn't package it all together. Like, I don't like my job. It's like, actually, you really like this. You really like this. You just don't like this.
Yeah.
Let's get creative.
Well, the other thing, I'm with that. And then Drew, the other thing is like, we're a remote company. So we restructured to remote. I love it. We see each other in person about a couple times a month, but it's all good. But at the same time, what I have noticed, particularly with junior folks, is if something's going wrong, I think it's harder to separate like what's great at work and what's great at home, or what's bad at home and what's bad at work. I feel like that's just like, there's a lot of cross-pollination there. And sometimes like when I'm hearing like, okay, we have a problem with this person or this has become a risk or whatnot, then I'll be like, so what's going on with them at home? Oh, well, their boyfriend just broke up with them. Oh, now they have a roommate. So working from home, like there's typically something else. And it's like, I can't solve for that. But what I can solve for is helping establish some boundaries and some focus. And that, again, I see that happen all the time, particularly with junior folks. And now when we're in the world of like hybrid working and like, you know, different like remote or different ways to work, I think that that's a place where, like CEOs and older managers just are really in the dark and they don't realize how like the cultural kind of changes.
That's so true. I mean, the amount of freedom and flexibility that virtual work has given us is an obvious benefit, right? You can recruit from all over the world. People don't have to commute as much anymore. But the challenges, I think we're still learning, like some of the access to what's really going on with people there, that distance. Sometimes I joke that in the distance grows conspiracy theories. Like the less we see each other, the less that you're more than just a face on the screen. It's easier for me to make up assumptions. I don't think Ellie likes me.
I think anybody who's ever had a long distance relate, like boyfriend or girlfriend, I mean, duh.
Yes.
I mean,
exactly.
Like between like 10 PM and like 7 AM, you've made up concocted this whole reason why like they haven't like texted you back, you know, that to me seems like it falls right in there. So
how do you, it sounds like you guys see each other at least a few times a month. Is that part of the effort of like, hey, we can't be too disconnected? Like, how do you guys still try to feel and foster connection even in a remote kind of way?
I would say we have intentional hubs. So the majority of our team lives somewhere in Northern California or Southern California or Columbus, Ohio. So there is definite intentionality there. Like we have hub outings, we have budget assigned to hubs, we have hub leaders. And then offsites are really critical for us. So we typically take 2 offsites a year where we really kind of just check out of like client work for 72 hours to focus internally. Those have been helpful ways to stay connected. The other thing we do is I would say our Slack channels are the social Slack channels, although I'm rarely invited to them. So noting that, but which I'm happy about, obviously, they're building their own culture. But they, I think, are really active. And then also we have a daily stand-up. So if somebody looking from the outside in, we think that maybe we have like a proportionate amount of internal meetings, but we do status as a team on Mondays. We do an all hands on Fridays. It's typically more fun and kind of softer. And then we do a 15-minute daily stand-up. And that's, I think, just so there's always connection.
Yeah.
That's probably been, I think, some of the secrets to our success.
That's super huge. And that's gonna be huge for people listening. Cause I've talked to so many people, they're like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to close the gap. We've gained some benefit over here going remote. Mm-hmm. We've lost some critical stuff over here. Mm-hmm. And hearing what you've done intentionally to crank up connection through Slack, through stand-up meeting, through whatever, I think could really help somebody.
I think so. I mean, it's been great, you know. And then also just owning your calendar. I think that's the other thing. Like when I worked in offices, like if somebody's door was closed, you knew they were focused, right? In remote, if your calendar's blocked, I think that's probably a way. So just owning your calendars is something that we constantly encourage the team to do, as well as we do have no meeting days. And I don't know if those are, I think those are great for some members of the team, probably more of our subject matter experts. I think it's harder for some other members of the team who are like on the PM or client services team, because it's harder
That's
to
what I was
take
thinking
a
of. Yeah.
whole day with no meetings. So just really we're exploring with those with half days and whatnot. So
Super cool. All right. I can't leave this without hearing, at least learning more about this, because I told you I read The Boys in the Boat. It
yes.
gave me a little bit of an idea, you
Yeah.
know, of the whole team aspect and what's going on to the rowing. The person who sits in the front, who's facing backwards, what is their job?
The
The
person who's
coxswain or whatever you call them.
the coxswain, yeah. What are they actually doing?
Yeah.
They are they're the only person who's supposed to be speaking in the boat. So they're
Okay.
really the team captain or the quarterback. They have a microphone, and that's with speakers throughout the long boat, and they actually are technically steering. So they have cords that are connected to the rudder on the boat.
Interesting. Are they part of keeping people on the same cadence and rowing in sync, or is that the two front pullers, like you were saying?
They pullers rowers
Sorry.
Drew, we're going to work on some vernacular. They have a box that tells you your stroke rate that is connected to a magnet on the person sitting in front. So there's typically a race, there's a race strategy, what stroke rate you want to be at certain times. So they are watching that, and really they learn the technique, how to like verbalize how to increase technique and timing, and also just working together. And I'm flailing my arms, but it really, that's like an oar going in the water. So
Yes.
they really are great at that. And I do should give a shout out to Mary Whipple, who is just one of the most decorated coxswains globally. She's a four-time Olympic medalist.
Wow.
And or three time. Oops. But a very decorated coxswain, and she has a coxswain clinic that could be a leadership clinic, to be honest, because really learn teaching somebody how to be motivated when you are a third of the size, and also like don't actually do the physical work yet you still feel like you're the team, is probably one of, like watching her do that over and over again, practice after practice, it's been probably one of, she's taught me so much
Wow.
about leading and articulating and being clear and not bossy, but yet proactive. There's a whole lot about it. So,
That's why I'm fascinated, because like you, I love analogies. They help me
yeah.
take complex things and kind of find a simple way of seeing things. And I've always thought, like, what's obvious to me are the people that are rowing, and the analogy of what seat you're in and
Yeah.
being in sync with each other. But I'm like, I know that person exists in the business world.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm just curious, like, who is that in your business? You know, like, what role does that translate to in the life of a business?
Project management.
They're
PM.
not, because they're not actually in there doing all the grunt work and whatever, but they are overseeing. Yeah. Okay. Talk to me about that.
So they ensure that the trains run on time, on schedule, on budget, and they accomplish exactly where they're supposed to go. That's their job, to really track that, to be thinking about what the risks are in order to make that happen. What's the way? Back to the analogies, all this whole entire session. But is there going to be snow? Is there going to be weather? Is there going to be wind? What sort of risk could come in that could jeopardize us getting on time and on budget to the completion of the project? And that's their job. And then really leading like through, they lead status, they lead stand-ups, they have oversight over all the contracts, manage utilization, manage capacity, and then also like contractual compliance along with client services strategy and creative.
Love it. I love it. Yeah, it's just, I see a lot of, like, you've mentioned this for yourself. I just see a lot of powerful people that are used to being a key player in one way. And then as their responsibility grows, they actually get uncomfortable and they don't know how to be the person who's directly doing the impact.
Exactly.
And there's some mindset. That's why I'm like searching for analogies for them. I'm like, there's some mindset switch where it's like, hey, you don't, you're not that person anymore, but this is equally valuable, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah.
You don't have a direct impact anymore. Like I imagine it being like someone who used to be the top salesman and is now the VP of sales. And they're not necessarily on the phone anymore, closing clients, but their mind is having a hard time switching to like, so what's the value I bring if I'm not out there closing the deal?
We talk about that a lot in agency life. So sometimes the risk, it's like, how are you going to have an independent contributor that is unbelievable that you're going to pull off the front lines because you want them to try to make more amazing independent contributors? Oftentimes those skills don't even overlap. Right. Yeah. And you can learn utilizing a StrengthFinders or a Working Genius. I don't really think Enneagram is helpful, but those other two I know for me are really helpful. And it's like, do I want to put like a star designer and ask them to go lead other designers when maybe they just like to like work in the dark? Right.
Yeah.
Like they just want to work in the dark by themselves. And that's just what they like to, or a coder, same thing. Lots of independent contributors that are amazing at coding and web development for us. Like maybe they're not really supposed to be part of like the bigger mix, but then again, I think that's just really understanding your tools and like understanding your team.
Yeah. You might accidentally be killing something in them in your promotion. You know, it's like, we think we're doing a great job promoting you to be over all these people. And he's like, I just want to go out and crush what I do.
Exactly. Exactly. And, but really knowing your skills, like having the skills, like the confidence to be able to say that. I mean, thinking about me in the HR and the pitch conversation, like it cannot happen in the same day.
That's so good. Allie, I've already kept you over an hour. Thank you so much. This has been phenomenal. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to the podcast. And I know that people are going to love this episode, especially all the connections between the sports background and business today. I've had several ahas myself, so I appreciate you being a part of this conversation.
Thanks, Joe. This has been fantastic. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Founders, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and hop into our monthly founder email so we can ensure you stay on the edge of peak performance and massive business results.